And now, live from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Malloy Podcast. It is Monday the 4th, right, of June 2018. Glad you could stick around, or at least join us. I think the news today that was most upsetting to me, that freaked me out the most, was a ruling by the Supreme Court, 7-2, that if you're gay, you are not covered by the Public Accommodations Act, or whatever it was called. I guess several decades ago, a bill became law that said if you're in business to serve the public, then that's exactly what you have to do, serve the public. You can't say no Jews allowed. You can't say no Catholics allowed. You can't say no black folk allowed. But apparently you can say no gay people allowed. The fact that the ruling was 7-2 was a real shocker to me. I expected it to go 5-4. In favor of the baker who said his pissy little religious beliefs were being crumbled by these queers. Oh, my God. Jesus will hate me if I bake them their fucking cake. So a little homophobic baker who apparently has a strong belief in Christian bullshit, not the Christian stuff that's in the Bible. I don't think there's any place in the Bible that maybe in the Old Testament, that says you shouldn't bake a cake for gay folk. Anybody know where that is, what chapter and verse that is? Where would that be? Acts? Matthew? Some of Paul's letters to the Corinthians or the Ephesians or some of those people? I'm sure there must be somebody in there that got this little baker's gonads all in a twist that said, queers don't deserve wedding cakes. Not allowed. I saw a picture of the people celebrating this decision by the Supreme Court. And, you know, I wanted to say I don't get it, but I get it perfectly. I mean, I can't hide behind I don't get it anymore, or I don't understand anymore, or what the hell is going on anymore. I can't. Those little cliches that I've used over 30 years of talk radio just don't apply anymore. I know exactly what's going on, and you should too. The country is going fascist. There is no longer a Republican Party. The Democrats are feckless. I won't add the C word to it. The Democrats are feckless. And there is no Republican Party. Trump is moving to I've never seen anything like this. The most ignorant son of a bitch that you could possibly come up with as the president of the United States. And since nobody is stopping him, nobody is stopping him that has the power to stop him. Trump is just continuing on, consolidating what he perceives to be his power, making declarations that the Constitution is a worthless piece of paper, which I believe George Bush said, but George Bush never acted on it. Trump is acting on it. There is no rule of law anymore. There's only rule of Trump. I'm surprised. I really did think that Trump's stint as president of the United States would be very short-lived. He'd have his ass kicked out for some reason, ignorance, naivete, call it what you want. For some reason, I really did think that the Republicans, would see what he was doing, that he was sticking a knife into the back and the front and the top and the bottom of the Republican Party, and the Republican Party was going to be murdered while everybody watched. And I thought that would stimulate some of these Republicans to act like men and women and respecters of the Constitution and stop this miserable fuck. But no, didn't happen. As a matter of fact, the Republican Party has aided and abetted their own death. And in the process of doing that, they've also aided and abetted what appears now to be an unstoppable rush to fascism. I've talked about this for years, that the soil of the United States was rich for the seeds of fascism. You didn't have to plant them very deeply either. Maybe half inch, quarter inch below the surface, because there's something in the soil of America that is and always has been fascistic. I think it's only fascist attitudes that can willfully commit genocide, that can willfully condemn an entire population of people to subhuman status. It takes fascism to do that. And then in that process of condemning them to subhuman status, then start to kill them, whether they are Africans dragged here to provide the labor and the sweat and the toil for capitalism, or if they're Jews who are marched into death camps because Hitler doesn't like Jews. So it's not a surprise. It's just shocking to me that it's actually happening. I thought that – I honestly did believe this – that enough had been written about how fascism advances. I thought the writings of Hannah Arendt and Elie Wiesel and Nicholas – oh, what the hell was his name? He recently died – on a blank. But I thought all these writers, whether they were columnists for magazines or newspapers or editorial writers or novelists or essay writers, I thought they had made it very, very clear. I think Philip Roth tried to before he died. Made it very clear that fascism was just standing off stage, waiting for the right cue to come on and do its bit. And the right cue was the ascension of Donald Trump to the presidency. And fascism knew that the time was at hand and emerged. And all of Trump's miserable, disgusting, contemptible little helpers, millions of them are out there just cheering and applauding as the United States moves to a totalitarian form of government. I wonder if they'll be cheering 10 years from now. Probably. Probably. So the ruling today, regarding the Colorado baker, came down heavily in favor. One more example of restricting the rights of people. We have decided along the course of human history to break people up into divisions, categories, classes, put them in boxes. Blacks here, whites here, Asians here, Native Americans here, Australian Aborigines here, New Zealand Maoris here, Canadian First People here, First Nations here, you know, Catholics over here, Jews here, Protestants here, Buddhists, and then over here, blah, 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 blah. We spent the entire history of the human race doing that. And if you speak out against that and try to show the asininity or the stupidity or the destructiveness of doing that, you are accused of using identity politics. Yeah. Isn't that exactly what this is, what the Supreme Court ruled today? Wasn't it identity politics? They ruled that queers can't force a baker to make them a cake. Not that they walked in with guns drawn and said, make me a fucking cake or I'll kill you. No. They just went and asked for a cake. Public Accommodations Act means nothing. So, who's next? Queers today, who's next? Remember what Niemöller said. You know, you can fall back on that anytime you want to. But if gay folk were decapitated today, who's next? Somebody's next. You don't start a process like this very neatly with the full force of the highest legal authority in the United States, the constitutional legal authority, backing your claim that gay folk are somehow not qualified to have a wedding cake baked at a public place. Oh, it's a private business. Fuck that. Supreme Court didn't consider private business when they ruled if you're going to be open for business, then you will be open for business. No longer. Justice Anthony Kennedy, writing for the majority in the 7-2 decision, said a state commission in Colorado had violated the U.S. Constitution's protection of religious freedom. Fucking religion, this goddamn fucking religion, I swear to God. In ruling against the baker, a guy named Jack Phillips, who had refused, fuck you, to create a custom wedding cake for a gay couple. Justice Kennedy wrote, quote, the neutral and respectful consideration to which Mr. Phillips was entitled was compromised here. The Civil Rights Commission, that's the one in Colorado, the Civil Rights Commission's treatment of his case has some elements of a clear and impermissible hostility toward the sincere religious beliefs that motivate his objection. Jack Phillips' objections. You know what this is to me? This is unadulterated horseshit. And you know why? Not that you care, but for me, the why that makes it unadulterated horseshit is because during the civil rights struggle, black people struggling for civil rights in this country during that entire struggle, over and over and over again, whites would raise the Bible and quote the Bible that slaves were supposed to honor their masters and that a slave rebellion should be put down with no mercy. That was a religious issue. It's in the Bible. It's in the fucking Bible. So now what? Why didn't the Supreme Court rule when all the civil rights legislation of the 60s and 70s and 50s were being challenged, all those laws were being challenged? Supreme Court, for the most part, if not unanimously in their decisions, ruled in favor of equal protection under the law, equal justice under the law. And the right-wingers went just apeshit, especially the Christian fascists. They're the worst. They're the absolute worst. But the Supreme Court ruled over and over and over again in this country, there will be no overt, blatant discrimination that denies people their constitutional rights based on religious horseshit until today. So poor Jack Phillips, the baker, this poor son of a bitch, has opened the door, or the gate, to what will probably start as a trickle and then turn into a stampede of Christian fascists, white supremacists, and those two are interchangeable. The Caucasian identity movement, all these groups that want to suppress other people's rights in order to make sure that it's understood that the people at the top of the heap or the pyramid or the pile of shit are white, Christian, male, heterosexual. Am I making too big an issue out of this? Woo! Now, the decision by the Supreme Court today, as Justice Kennedy made it very clear, that decision turned on the Civil Rights Commission in Colorado. Their supposed hostility to religion. How, this is what I'm sorry, I don't understand. Maybe because I see religion as one of the most dangerous organizations ever put together. Religion was designed to teach people who to hate, who to beat up, who to invade, who to kill, and why, and how to work your way through all the murder and mayhem and injustice and still find your way into some fucked up paradise. That's religion. But the Civil Rights Commission in Colorado, according to Kennedy and the other six justices who voted to take away civil rights, saw the commission's hostility to religion. I don't get that. Religion is hostile. The attitude of folk who are not using the Bible or the Quran or whatever the fuck they're using as a cudgel, the attitude of people who are not doing that, I can't see as anti-religious. Now, I'm talking about where it concerns making laws and enforcing those laws. I'm openly hostile to religion. I wish the goddamn institution would just vanish. But, of course, that's not going to happen. Not ever. But religion always has been and will continue to be one of, if not the, root cause of conflict among the various tribes that have lived on this little blue dot, right? So the Supreme Court today made sure that the idea of religion used as a suppressive agent would continue. You want a cake, queers? You're not going to get it here. Yeah, but it says open for business. Tough shit. Yeah, but I thought we had federal laws against discriminating against me and my partner. Well, think what you want. But poor old Jack Phillips. I mean, what the fuck? Old Jack Phillips. Can you imagine? He's got the baker's flour up to his elbows, and he's working his ass off just trying to be a God-fearing Christian, doing his job, and a couple of faggots walk in and want a cake? Why, Jack's world almost crumbled. It was was ripped to pieces when the queers walked in. Oh, my God. Are you queer? It depends on your point of view. What do you want in my bakery? Well, we'd like to have a wedding cake. Supposing the two gay guys would have walked in and just said, hey, we'd like a wedding cake for a couple of friends of ours. Ralph and Mary. It's sick. This ruling by the Supreme Court is sick. I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but could it be a decision not totally different from the Dred Scott ruling? That these black slaves that were wandering around the countryside expecting to be treated like human beings could not be treated like human beings for a very simple reason. They weren't human beings. And apparently gay folk now the same thing. According to this Christian asshole, Jack Phillips, and seven members of the Supreme Court, gay folk are not human either. They are something else, something that Jesus hates, something that God scorns. That makes sense, doesn't it? Huh? Doesn't that make sense? How do you say, I hate these fucking queers in Aramaic, which I believe is the language Jesus spoke, unless it was, I don't know, Hebrew or Arabic or Chinese. But how do you say that? How would Jesus have said, well, he couldn't have because of his 12 disciples. How many were gay? Oh, come on now. How many were gay? You got 13 guys wandering around the Middle East 2,000 years ago in robes and sandals, for God's sake, with long hair, fighting among themselves about who loves Jesus the most or who does Jesus love the most. I swear, I've said this before, I swear I wish there was some archaeological proof, some ancient proof that explained how many of the disciples were gay. Wouldn't that blow the minds of these so-called Christians? Wouldn't that just fucking make the tops of their heads blow off and their brains scatter around on the sidewalk? Wouldn't it? What? Boom. And what if they found out Jesus was gay? Whoa! Oh, MFG! A gay Jesus? Why not? I know the Christians like to believe he was celibate. He never had sex and probably never masturbated. Probably never tried to peek into the communal showers of the women. In that regard, the Christians have desexualized Jesus. And any attempt to un-desexualize him is seen as the worst kind of blasphemy. The absolute worst kind. Sick, sick, sick. Kennedy also wrote, and not being a legal scholar, I have no idea what he means here, but he wrote, quote, the outcome of cases like this in other circumstances must await further elaboration in the courts, all in the context of recognizing that these disputes must be resolved with tolerance, without undue disrespect to sincere religious beliefs, and without subjecting gay persons to indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market. Oh, Justice Kennedy, what the fuck are you doing? I mean, what kind of double talk, gobbledygook horseshit did you just say? Wouldn't you think, Justice Kennedy, that what your court ruled today does subject gay people to indignities when they seek goods and services in what you describe as an open market? I mean, what would you call it, Kennedy? What would you call it? If two gay folk walk into a store that obviously is being run on open market principles, there's no sign on the door that says Negroes, Jews, gay people, and dogs not welcome. And they go in and ask for a wedding cake? And they're told, no, I don't do that. You don't do what? I don't make wedding cakes for queers. Justice Kennedy, yo, I know you're not listening to me. You don't know fucking I'm alive. But I would, given a chance, I would ask you, would that not be considered an indignity? You say, without subjecting gay persons to indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market. And how do you say that asking a guy to bake a goddamn cake is undue disrespect to sincere religious beliefs? See, I told you, I'm not a legal scholar or an expert on rulings by the Supreme Court. But when the court rules 7-2 that some religious jerk-off has a right to say to people, you are not human. If you were human, I would bake you a cake. But you're not. You're queer. And my Bible tells me that you queers are condemned. So get the fuck out of my bakery. And take your twitchy little asses with you. Indignity there? Nah. How could that be an indignity? Huh? I ask you. Woo! The case that was decided today arose from a brief encounter 6 years ago. And I can imagine how the so-called plaintiff in this, Phillips, what's his first name? Where'd it go? Jack, that figures. Jack Phillips, I don't know how he's managed to survive 6 years waiting for this momentous ruling, taking away civil rights of a class of people. Why it's a class of people is utter nonsense, but that's how we identify each other now. You're gay. You're not. You're a Jew. You're a Gentile. You've got a pointy head. You're a member of Congress. But when back in 2012, poor Jack Phillips, all this time he waited, David Mullins and Charlie Craig went into Mr. Phillips' bakery. Masterpiece Cake Shop in Lakewood, Colorado. The two men were going to be married in Massachusetts. And they were looking for a wedding cake for a reception in Colorado. But oh, Jack turned him down, saying, I'm not going to use my talents to convey a message of support for same-sex marriage. Now, I don't know if he said that, but in the third person, it says here, he would not use his talents to convey a message of support for same-sex marriage at odds with his religious faith. Mr. Mullins and Mr. Craig said they were humiliated by Jackoff's refusal to serve them, and they filed a complaint with Colorado Civil Rights Commission, saying that Phillips had violated a state law barring discrimination based on sexual orientation. It's a fucking law in Colorado. But that doesn't mean anything. Used to be a law that black folk couldn't vote. How soon before gay folk can't vote? So the two men, Mullins and Craig, won their argument, their case before the Colorado Civil Rights Commission and in the state courts. In fact, the Colorado Court of Appeals ruled that old Jackoff Phillips' free speech rights had not been violated, noting that the gay couple had not discussed the cake's design before Mr. Phillips turned them down. What if the cake, in other words, would have said, "Happy marriage"? Would Jack Phillips have been humiliated and scorned by his fucked up religious beliefs if it just would have said that? The court added that people seeing the cake would not understand Mr. Phillips was making a statement, and that he remained free to say what he liked about same-sex marriage in other settings. Yeah, if he wanted to, Jack Phillips could make himself a nice sign and walk up and down on any public street saying gay people should be burned at the stake. But when gay folk come into your shop, you asshole, bake them a cake. Ooh, that would violate your religious beliefs. It says there, right, in one of the books of the Bible and one of the chapters, when queers enter into thy bake shop, do thee not bake them a cake, for to do so would be blasphemy. Bullshit. Gay rights groups argue that same-sex couples are entitled to equal treatment from businesses open to the public. And the gay rights groups did make an argument that if the court went in favor of Jackoff Phillips, which it did today, that would undermine the Supreme Court's ruling of just 3 years ago guaranteeing a constitutional right to same-sex marriage. Because a ruling today marks the marriage of gay couples as second-class marriages, where they can't have a fucking cake, unworthy of legal protection. And the religious groups, Onward Christian Soldiers, responded that the government should not force people to violate their principles in order to make a living. Well, okay. Yeah, force people? Are you forcing somebody when you say, I'm open for business to the public? You didn't say I'm open for business to the public except the queers or except the Jews or except people who are blind. You didn't say that, Jackoff Phillips. That's not what your business was about. Your business was making fucking cakes. But I'm sure every right-wing devil in Colorado now will flock to your bake shop and order up all kinds of cakes and cookies and donuts and pastries and let you know that Jesus is on your side, right? The Supreme Court has long recognized a First Amendment right not to be forced to speak, the religious group said. In 1977, for instance, the court ruled that New Hampshire could not require people to display license plates bearing the state's motto, Live Free or Die. What the fuck does that have to do with baking a cake for a couple of people who come in and say, hey, we want a wedding cake for Joe and John? What? Joe and John? Why? That's like Adam and Steve, not Adam and Eve. Get the fuck out of here. Good God. So anyway, as far as I'm concerned, that is the big news of the day. The fact that the United States Supreme Court, in a landmark decision that shows how religious disgust and contempt and hatred is flourishing in the United States and now has been granted Supreme Court protection. What a bunch of shit. Well, let's see who has their rights to a wedding cake denied next.
And next you're dazzled by the beauty of it all. Lovers in a dangerous time. Lovers in a dangerous time.
Yeah, the ruling by the Supreme Court today is going to have some far-reaching implications and results. The one last thing I have to say about it, at least for this podcast, is the gag reflex inside me that was tripped when all the Christians were celebrating the taking away of the same right they enjoy. Which, by the way, what happens if you're a gay Christian? You're fucked! That's what happens, a gay Christian. I would hope that gay folk, well, I would hope that nobody would follow religious horse shit, but that's ridiculous. Oh, well. How long has it been since Hurricane Maria ripped the hell out of Puerto Rico? How long has it been? 8 months. 70,000 homes and businesses destroyed. 70,000. 3.5 million people with no power or water or healthcare system. Everything ripped to shit, just destroyed. These are Americans, but, you know, they're Americans who live, you know, over there. It's my understanding now that the death toll from Hurricane Maria makes what Puerto Rico went through the worst disaster in terms of people killed in the 20th century? Ever? No, it can't be ever. I know that there were hurricanes that have killed other hurricanes that have killed more than 5,000 people. But just for shits and giggles, let's call it that. The worst disaster that American citizens have experienced. But the response from mainland America, from here in the land of the free and the home of the fuckheads, huh? The death toll, by the way, if you're keeping track, a new report estimates that that death toll is 70 times larger than what the bullshit artists in the Trump administration tried to claim it was. 70 times larger. And that's, I don't know if that's taking into consideration the people that have died a month later, two, three, four, five, six, 7 months later, because they have been dealing with no health care, no electricity, and no drinkable water. So the truth is the death toll from Hurricane Maria will always be an estimate. The New York Times points out that the reasons for the slow and inadequate response that our American brothers and sisters in Puerto Rico have had to endure, various reasons. Puerto Rico's distance from the United States mainland. Local mismanagement, which you're going to find everywhere. You might even find it in a Christian hovel someplace in Colorado. You'll find local mismanagement, right? Now, by mismanagement, Puerto Rico, part of what they're referring to was the infamous repair contract that, for some reason, was granted soon after the hurricane destroyed the island to a firm in Montana that had two employees. I wonder who got the kickback on that one, huh? I bet it was somebody in Congress, maybe somebody from Montana, you think? Huh? The bankruptcy that Puerto Rico has gone through because of the way it was brutalized by the bond sellers in Wall Street, who just looked at Puerto Rico as a great big piece of meat that they could just keep cutting pieces off of until there was nothing left. Anyway, the bankruptcy caused by the capitalists on the mainland has made federal legislators wary, the Times says, of how relief funds are dispersed. Yeah, sons of bitches may take the money and use it to, you know, buy food or something. Damn them. But the chief reason, according to the New York Times, and I agree, the chief reason that 8 months later people are still dying, electricity is not 100% on. And by the way, 2 days ago, or was it three, hurricane season of 2018 began and will last June, July, August, September, October, November. What, 6 months? But the chief reason for the delay and the pain and the suffering and the poverty and the death has been Trump's leadership. Trump's leadership, if you can call it that. Trump is a racist piece of human shit. That's all he is. He's a thug, a gangster, a criminal, as is his whole family. But you see, Puerto Rico, according to the orange orangutan, Puerto Rico is, you know, they're not really Americans. I mean, what the fuck? They speak, what is that language they speak, Ivanka? What is that? What is that? Is that Hawaiian? What is that? What do they speak? It's an island just like Hawaii. Or what do they speak?
Spanish, Daddy.
Well, they speak Spanish. And a lot of them are brown. I don't want a fucking thing to do with them.
But see, Puerto Rico is perceived as a place where poverty and hardship and rotten government are just accepted as the norm. And I can tell you from spending time there that that's not true. That the people in Puerto Rico, I know you're going to find this hard to believe. You're going to find this hard to believe, and you may think I'm just making shit up. But honestly, the people who live in Puerto Rico want the same things as the people who live in Midtown Manhattan or suburban Atlanta or Los Angeles. They want a decent life. That's all. That's all. I think that's what they want. I don't know. I haven't talked to 3.5 million people. But I'm guessing. I know it's hard to believe, but I'm guessing that all the Puerto Rican people want, if that's the right nomenclature, is a decent life. Just like people in Houston. But remember what this filthy pig son of a bitch Trump said after the hurricane. First, his shitty tweets that tried to demean the woman who's the mayor of San Juan, Carmen Cruz. And one of those tweets, this filthy son of a bitch said, quote, they want everything to be done for them, end quote. No, Trump, that's you.
That's you, you miserable bastard. That's you. And then remember when he went on his visit to the island where he tossed out rolls of paper towels? Wasn't that just so fucking human of Mr. Trump? Oh, look, he's tossing out rolls. Here, catch. Hey, he caught that one. One-handed, too. Goddamn, give me some more. Here, catch. You in the back with the baby. Here, catch. And when he was there, he said Puerto Ricans should, quote, be very proud that only 16 people had died. Unlike, you know, the real catastrophe, like Katrina, which took 1,800 lives. You know, fuck you, Puerto Rico, so you lost 16 people. Woo! And the official U.S. government toll of death in Puerto Rico now stands at, hold on to your ass, 64. 64 people. Is that absurd enough for you? There's a study by independent researchers from Harvard and other institutions published last Tuesday in the New England Journal of Medicine. And after doing their survey work across the island and comparing mortality rates they encountered to those before Maria, they came up with an estimated 4,645 additional deaths through the end of the year. A third of them, and this is what makes my stomach hurt and makes me want to lean over from my desk here and vomit. A third of them died for lack of medical care. Died for lack of medical care. Yeah, well. And here's the truth. A death toll, as the Times points out, a death toll is a critical measure of the scale of a catastrophe. And in theory, that number should shape the public and the official response. And then there's this. As the Times reports, the island, Puerto Rico, a commonwealth of the United States, yeah, we still have those, whose people are American citizens, remains in need of help. Parts of the island are still without electricity. Thousands of residents lack shelter, and much of the island remains in ruins. As many as 135,000 Puerto Ricans have left for the U.S., and reporters for the New York Times wrote in a major report in early May last year, after Maria and a preceding hurricane called Irma, they wrote, quote, Puerto Rico all but slipped from the modern era, end quote. Puerto Rico all but slipped from the modern era. How about if that headline would have read, the state of New York all but slipped from the modern era. Wyoming all but slipped from the modern era. Florida all but slipped from the modern era. Would that have been tolerated? Well, under Trump it may have been. But we know goddamn good and well that under Trump, Puerto Rico slipping from the modern era didn't mean shit to this evil antichrist who walks the halls of the White House. You Christians have your boy. Why don't you burn your Bibles? Why don't you rip the New Testament out and use it for bathroom tissue? You might as well, you phony sons of bitches. You celebrate Trump. 80-some percent of you think he is a wonderful moral leader. And people are still dying.
Americans in Puerto Rico, but you don't give a fuck. Oh, well. And when that Harvard study was presented to the tribe in the White House, the spokeswoman, Ms. Trunchbull, responded with more self-congratulation. God, these people just fucking, I cannot tell you the depth of the anger I feel towards these people. But anyway, she claimed that the government had responded to Maria with the largest FEMA effort ever. Yeah. Trump, this filthy subhuman, will never, and the people around him will never accept one essential truth about the people who live in Puerto Rico, and that is this: they are our countrymen, our fellow citizens. And we may decide to go bomb the shit out of the rest of the world. We may kill civilians by the hundreds. We may firebomb cities. We may commit war crimes and do bad shit. But hey, yo, these are Puerto Ricans. They are our fellow citizens. Shouldn't we take care of them? Apparently not, huh? Now, if they were all white, and all spoke English, you think it would be different? Yeah, so do I. Oh, Christ. Oh, just a little bit here about Scott Pruitt, the Environmental Protection Agency head. Environmental Protection Agency. Oh, my God. Well, a senior official in that benighted agency was forced to act essentially as the personal assistant to Scott Pruitt, helping him hunt for that apartment and get him a good deal on travel to a college football game. And guess what? Congressional transcripts show that Pruitt even sent this poor, miserable EPA official out to get a used mattress from the Trump International Hotel for him. Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Oh, my God. Woo! Milan Hoop. That's her name. She is Scott Pruitt's scheduling director. Scheduling director. You miserable little shit. You need a scheduling director. Ah! Anyway, she told congressional investigators that she worked unpaid, to help Pruitt find new housing. That was when Pruitt was renting a condominium bedroom for $50 a night from a lobbyist who had business before the EPA. Graft corruption? What graft corruption? What? Don't look at that. Look over here. Look what I'm holding. A shiny thing that beeps. Look, beep, beep, beep. Isn't that cool? Beep, beep. And federal standards, of course, prohibit such bullshit. You know, personal assistance from a subordinate, even if that employee is working outside of office hours. No, you're not supposed to do that. According to the standards of ethical conduct for employees of the executive branch, the following, quote, directing or coercing a subordinate to perform such activities during non-duty hours constitutes an improper use of public office for private gain, end quote. But everybody in the Trump administration sees that as a compliment, not an admonition. Yeah, fucking A, of course. Of course I had people out trying to find me a used mattress. Of course I had people out finding me an apartment. You're goddamn right. Hey, how about that? I get 3 gold stars for that, don't I?
Huh? I'm Scott Pruitt. I'm the head of the EPA. How am I doing? You're doing a heck of a job there, Scotty. Now, if you want the skinny on some of this, I mean, what the fuck? It's only Monday. But according to a partial transcript released by Democrats on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, they released part of a transcript? Oh, no! But according to that partial transcript, poor Miss Millen Hupp worked with real estate agents and visited at least 10 apartments over more than a month trying to find Scott Pruitt new digs. 10. I mean, did Scott tell her what he wanted? Or did she take pictures and bring them back to this miserable son of a bitch? Who knows? Who cares? Miss Hupp also did other personal errands for Pruitt, including making sure that he had adequate accommodations to and from the Rose Bowl. Of course. Of course. Now, she made those statements during an interview with that committee a couple weeks ago, which, believe it or not, is part of a larger investigation into Pruitt's spending and management practices. Yeah, sure it is. The House Oversight Panel's inquiry is one of a dozen ongoing federal investigations related to Mr. Pruitt's first-class travel, $3.5 million spending on security, ties to lobbyists, and other issues. Yep, he's part of the Trump gangster organization, huh? These fuckers make the mafia look like pikers. They really do. And the chairman of the Oversight Committee is none other than Mr. Pointyhead, Trey Gowdy. Now, look, let me make something clear. I don't know if his head is pointed. I don't know if he's a pinhead. I really don't. But the way he combs his hair, it appears that everything comes to a point. It's the goddamnedest thing I've ever seen. I mean, I should talk about hair. I don't have hair. I have nerve endings growing out of my head. But Trey Gowdy, with that shaved weasel look and then the point on the top of his head, like I say, I don't know if that's because that's the shape of his skull or if he just decided he wanted to look like a pinhead. I have no idea, and the truth is I really don't give a shit, but it's sort of funny to watch him get all serious with that South Carolina accent of his, that low country accent, and the pinhead. Oh, Jesus. I want to get out of government so I can go back into crime fighting. That's what I like. I like crime fighting. And if I don't make it in crime fighting, I'm going to join the circus. A big sign out in front. Come in free to pinhead. God damn. Anyway, Trey Gowdy, who is the chairman of that committee, got a letter from Elijah Cummings, the ranking member of the committee, the Democrat. And Gerald Connolly, another Democrat of Virginia. And the letter accused Scott Pruitt of, quote, multiple abuses of authority, end quote, by using agency staff for his own personal purposes. Cummings and Connolly wrote, quote, if Ms. Hupp's statements to the committee are accurate, Mr. Pruitt crossed a very clear line and must be held accountable, end quote. And sure enough, a spokeswoman for Pinhead criticized the decision by the Democrats to release part of Ms. Hupp's statements. That's the crime. That's the crime, right, Pinhead? Now, Pinhead wouldn't speak on the record, but Amanda Gonzalez, why, she must be a Mexican, who is a spokeswoman for Pinhead, said, quote,
Selectively releasing portions of witness interview transcripts damages the credibility of our investigation and discourages future witnesses from coming forward. The committee will continue conducting a serious, fact-driven investigation, and therefore will wait until the conclusion of our investigation to release our findings. End quote. Amanda Gonzalez, huh? Whoa, watch out now. Ms. Gonzalez did not respond to the New York Times when she was asked if Pinhead would support using his subpoena power for this investigation. Because you see, the way the rules are set up, the Democrats can't do it. They can't force witnesses to come in. Only the majority party, the party that's sitting there with the power, they can do what the fuck they want. And if the minority group doesn't like it, go pound sand up your nostrils. And then we have Jahan Wilcox. Jahan? The hell kind of a name is that? Hey, Trump! There's another foreigner over there. You got a Gonzalez, now you got a Jahan. You might want to check it out. I bet they're not Christian. Well, Gonzalez probably is, but you know. Anyway, this person, Jahan Wilcox, who is identified here in the Times as a spokesman for the EPA, Jahan said in a statement, quote, "We are working diligently with Chairman Gowdy and are in full cooperation in providing the committee with the necessary documents, travel vouchers, receipts, and witnesses to his inquiries." End quote. God, that sounds so official. Oh, and by the way, back to Ms. Hupp, the one who was forced to go out and find digs for this piece of shit Pruitt and find him a used mattress. You know, that's a real stomach churner there, a used mattress. Now, let me ask you, Seeger, would you go buy a used mattress? Even one that's been debugged? I mean, would you? What the fuck, Scott? You can buy a mattress for $200. Why? Because it's a Trump hotel mattress? Huh? A used mattress. Son of a bitch, I hope she found one, and I hope it's just saturated with bed bugs. And I hope Pruitt sleeps naked. Oh, wait a minute. Don't say that, Malloy, because then you get the vision. Don't. Stop. Raspberry jello. Climbing up a tree. Anyway, Ms. Hupp told investigators that Scott Pruitt did not pay her for her work, which she said she performed on her personal time, like lunch hours and vacations. Asked about an email to the managing director of the Trump International Hotel in Washington, poor Mrs. Hupp said, quote, "I don't recall sending this email, but I do recall there being discussions about the possibility of securing an old mattress from the Trump Hotel." End quote. Jesus Christ, this is just crazy. I wonder if they put it in Pruitt's room, then put a black light on it and see all the stains show up. Huh? Oh my God, what's that? I don't know, but it doesn't look good. Oh, Christ. Remember all those I'm sure you had an investigation like this in your local hometown television investigative unit, right? They go to some motel because all motels are run by South Asians now. So, you know, you got to watch those little devils. But they go to these motels with the black light and make the room dark and then turn the black light on. And you see all these smears and stains, and stuff on the mattress. And
There's a chance maybe that shit turns Scott Pruitt on. Maybe he look at that and go, oh, yes, this is the one I want. I can't stand this. I really can't. I really can't. I really can't. Miss Hupp said that she doesn't remember whether a mattress was ever purchased. And then we have Robert Weissman, the president of Public Citizen. You know who they are. Didn't Nader found that? Maybe he didn't. Anyway, Robert Weissman said that Scott Pruitt's reliance on Ms. Hupp to go find him a used mattress and shit is a violation of federal ethics rules. Mr. Weissman said, quote, Pruitt apparently believes the agency is at his service to attend to his personal needs, whims, and desires for luxurious accommodations. Usually, public service thinks they are working for the public, end quote. Oh, Robert, come on, come on. We're in the age of Trump, huh? And the agency is at his service. It is there to cater to this evil piece of shit, just like the office of the presidency is there to cater to Trump's insanity. These people, you know, the idea of public servants, please, please. Robert Weissman and anybody else who might want to take literary flights of fantasy about terms that are no longer operative, please stop using the term public servant. Especially now. Are you fucking kidding me? Who in the Trump government is a public servant? Total bullshit. Oh, and by the way, Trump now says the appointment of Robert Mueller as special counsel was totally unconstitutional. Not unconstitutional. Totally unconstitutional. Trump also thinks he's a king. And you know what? Here's the bad part. Trump has unfettered power to kill people. He can order military strikes against any fucking body he chooses to. Anybody. I'll come back in a minute and we'll talk about that horror show. So the leader of the free world was on his Twitter machine this morning, and he informed the world that the appointment of a special counsel in the Russia investigation against him and his fucked up family is totally, all caps, unconstitutional. And he also says he has the power to pardon himself. Go fuck yourself if you don't like it. And he raised the prospect that he might take extraordinary action to immunize himself from the probe, the Russia probe. Now, the reason he says he would not have to pardon himself, even though he says, I can if I want to, but I won't. The reason he won't, he said, is because he's, quote, done nothing wrong. But he insisted that, quote, numerous legal scholars, end quote, have concluded that he has the absolute right to pardon himself. You know who the numerous legal scholars were? Ivanka and the little Nazi Jew, Stephen Miller, and probably Bannon. He probably slips in the servant's interest. Those are the legal scholars who said, yo, Mr. President, of course you have the right to do that. You can do it. Who the fuck's telling you can't? Democrats? The truth is that legal scholars and constitutional experts say that No, he doesn't have the power to pardon himself. What the fuck? Kings have that power. I think it was called the divine right of kings, right? Trump, being the asshole that he is, he didn't give any definitive details in his tweets about the legal basis for his ridiculous claim that the appointment of Mueller was unconstitutional. where in the Constitution, orange asshole, does it say that? But in the tweet where he categorically said that the appointment of Mueller was unconstitutional, he also insisted that, quote, "We play the game because I, unlike the Democrats, have done nothing wrong." Oh, dear God. Oh, dear God. This would be so incredibly funny, all of this, except that it's not. Now, if you remember, a number of people have tried to convince this idiotic, narcissistic son of a bitch that it would be best if Trump avoided directly challenging the special counsel. Some of his lawyers, I don't know, 10 lawyers ago, 20 lawyers ago, who the fuck knows, but some of his lawyers at the time said the best way to bring the probe to an end was to just cooperate. I mean, you're innocent, right? Right, Donnie? You're innocent. You've done nothing wrong. How many fucking times are you going to tell us that? There's no collusion. No collusion. There's no collusion. There's no obstruction. There's no collusion. None of it. None of it. Well, then, you dumb shit, let the probe go forward, and then you'll be cleared. And then you can say, I told you so. I told you so. I told you so. Maybe the reason you don't do that is because you're guilty as hell. What did I just say? Maybe the reason? Oh, come on, Malloy. The reason you don't do that is because you're guilty as hell. And you know it, you ugly bastard. But anyway, that strategy of cooperation, that disappeared when he got this little rabid monkey, Rudy Giuliani. You ever notice Giuliani, when he's making a point, his eyes get real big? That's just like those fucking howler monkeys in the jungle just before they attack you and try to eat your throat. You know, those eyes go, what? What? Have you noticed that? Yeah, howler monkeys. Jesus Christ. So anyway, with his new legal team led by Bright Eyes, Trump and the rest of this gang of criminals has become openly dismissive of Mueller and his team of prosecutors because they're above the law. What the fuck do they care? Mueller, investigate. Go ahead. Do whatever you want to do. You know, you are incidental. You're superfluous. Do you really think? I can hear this. I can hear this, and you can too if you listen closely enough. At night after somebody says, Donnie, time to turn off the TV now. When Trump is sitting around with Bright Eyes and the rest of these people, you know, Bannon has slipped in through the service entrance again, and Ivanka has come down in one of her negligees. She always comes down in negligee right before bedtime. Hi, Daddy. Hi, Daddy. Listen, Daddy, I need another $50 million. It's yours? Lean over the desk here and I'll give it to you. Jesus Christ. But anyway, they all got together. And decided that all they have to do is keep undermining or attempting to undermine the efforts of Robert Mueller. It's very easy to do. Goebbels, Himmler, Hitler, they all explained how to do it. They wrote the book on it. Just keep repeating the big lie. That's all you have to do. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to spend the dime. You don't have to make any commitments. Just keep repeating the lie. And then at least half of the population to whom you're lying will eventually believe you. And all you need is half plus one, right? Anyway, all these tweets out of the president's Twitter machine, all that happens just a day after Giuliani, is all over television on Sunday. Giuliani told Huffington Post that Trump is essentially immune from any kind of prosecution. And this, I mean, just to show you how fucking insane these people are. Giuliani also said that Trump could have shot to death James Comey without even risking indictment while he was president. Have you ever heard anything like that from a president of the United States or his chief attorney, this howler monkey fuck Giuliani? He could have shot James Comey and killed him without risking an indictment. Yeah. I mean, that's what presidents do. Eyes go wide. That's what they do. Eyes go wide. Now, Giuliani apparently had a moment of clarity or something. Maybe he had just come from the men's room and felt a little bit relieved. So when he was on Meet the Press, he said, yeah, you know, wise go wide. The president has the power to pardon himself, but it would be, quote, unthinkable, end quote, for him to do so. Giuliani said that would, quote, lead to probably an immediate impeachment. And he has no need to do that. He didn't do anything wrong. He has no reason to pardon himself because he did nothing wrong. What a profound statement when you think about it. Oh, my God. Come on, Mueller, please. Will you bring this fucking Chinese fire drill to an end?
Well, that's racist.
That's not my quote. In his tweet, Trump also called the investigation, as he has for months now, quote, a never-ending witch hunt, end quote. You know, if I were a witch right now, I think I would try to cast a spell over the White House where it concerns Donald Trump because he keeps using the name of Wiccans in vain. Witch hunt, witch hunt. He doesn't know what the term means. It has a terrible, terrible meaning from history. When witches were hunted and then either ripped to pieces by hungry mastiffs or drowned or burned at the stake. Trump wouldn't know that. Anyway, he said the witch hunt is being led by, quote, 13, get this. Now, I just about fell down and I'm serious. I could feel valves shutting down in my body. I thought, oh, fuck, you're going to have a heart attack here. But he said that the witch hunt is being conducted by, quote, 13 very angry, here it comes, and conflicted Democrats. Conflicted? Who the fuck gave him that word? Conflicted? Conflicted? Oh, they're conflicted Democrats. What does that mean, Mr. Presidente?
What the fuck do you think it means?
Conflicted Democrats. Oh, and Trump, determined to cause a war between the United States and Canada, also tweeted this morning about trade, and he asserted that Canada, quote, has all sorts of trade barriers on American agricultural products. He tweeted, not acceptable! And he also had to toss in a little narcissistic lump of human waste about his accomplishments at the 500-day mark in office. 500 days. Boy, time rips by when you're having fun, doesn't it? And shortly after he blab-blab-blabbed about his wonderful time in office, the White House press office sent an email to reporters entitled, quote, President Donald J. Trump's 500 Days of American Greatness. End quote. American greatness. Boy. Harry Lipman has a piece out right now. Lipman is former U.S. attorney and deputy assistant attorney general. Right now, he teaches University of California, San Diego, Department of Political Science, practices law at a firm called Constantine Cannon. Now, let me just share this with you verbatim because something we've been talking about. Harry Lipman writes this, quote, the president believes he's above the law. That's the takeaway from the confidential 20-page memo sent by President Trump's lawyers to the special counsel Robert Mueller, published over the weekend by the New York Times. And it's the same sentiment that Rudy Giuliani expressed on Sunday when he suggested that Mr. Trump has the power to pardon himself. The central claim, now listen up, y'all, the central claim of the legal memorandum is that it is impossible for the president to illegally obstruct any aspect of the investigation into Russia's election meddling. And that's because, as president, Mr. Trump has the constitutional power to terminate the inquiry or pardon his way out of it. Therefore, and this is key, therefore, he cannot obstruct justice by exercising this authority, quote, no matter his motivation, end quote. What the fuck? If Trump's motivation is to obstruct justice, he cannot obstruct justice by exercising the authority to pardon himself, even if his motivation is to obstruct justice. Oh, isn't that wonderful? It sounds like circular logic, but it's neither. It's insanity. It's fascism. It's Trump. Anyway, Harry Lipman writes in probably the most understated sentence I've seen in a long time, quote, this understanding of presidential power is radical and absolutist. It is also unsound and almost certain to be sharply rejected should it ever be proffered in court. It's radical and absolutist. Yeah, that's true. Lipman goes on, even granting the contention that Trump could simply terminate the investigation, it's a non sequitur to argue, as Trump's lawyers do, that as a consequence, he cannot obstruct the investigation, even though he could terminate it. That's not obstruction. Imagine, for example, that the worst version of facts proves true. That Trump fired the FBI director James Comey, tried to fire Mueller, constructed a false account of the June 2016 Russia meeting, tried to force Attorney General Jeff Sessions to reverse his recusal decision that was driven by Justice Department policy, all to protect his own skin and his family's fortune. Okay, you got it? Now, if this were the case, the elements of obstruction, which in brief is the interference or attempted interference with an official proceeding, like, you know, a grand jury investigation. If this were the case, the elements of obstruction would be plainly met. There it is. Most important, the president would have acted with corrupt intent as it is well understood under the law. That's not good enough, right? No tenable account, Lippman goes on, of executive power holds that a president's purposes in exercising powers accorded under Article 2, which says to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, have no import. If it were otherwise, if the president had the authority to use his constitutional powers for any reason, it would follow that he could accept a bribe for doing an official act or more saliently extend a pardon to keep a witness from testifying. This would very clearly violate the maxim that the president is not above the law. Now, as Lippman writes, if this sounds like legal theorizing, just consider the fact that Trump's position is soundly contradicted by the Richard Nixon case. Under Trump's view, Nixon would not have been guilty of obstruction for ordering the FBI to stand down on the investigation of the Watergate burglars or paying off the defendants to keep them quiet. And subsequent investigations into alleged abuses of presidential power, Iran-Contra, as well as Whitewater, took it as accepted law that the president is capable of obstructing justice. Well, of course he is. And while the case of the president can present challenging legal and practical questions of enforcement, both because the president is the head of the executive branch and because of the political levers he can pull, there is scant support among constitutional scholars or in case law for the president's drastic argument, the one he's making now. But, you know, I'd like to say, Mr. Lippman, that it doesn't make a goddamn bit of difference if there's support among constitutional scholars to Trump's position. Trump doesn't know from constitutional scholars. What the hell does that mean? That's a meaningless term to him unless you can put it in a picture. Draw him a picture. This is a constitutional scholar. And give it to him while he's eating his cheeseburgers. Maybe he will look at it and something will click in his head. Forget that. The second pillar of the letter submitted by Mr. Trump's lawyers to Mr. Mueller is that he is too busy running the country to sit for an interview. Oh, I think Bill Clinton's lawyer tried to make that case too. Remember that? Now, the truth is Bill Clinton probably was too busy. But, yo, Bill, if you can't keep your pants zipped up, you're going to have to find time. Sorry, that's just the way it goes. First your money, then your clothes. Yeah, if you found time for the blowjob, you certainly can find time for the testimony, right? Billy boy, yo. Too busy running the country. Trump's lawyers say that forcing him to testify, quote, demeans the office of the president before the world, end quote. Oh, what the fuck? I mean, to me, what, testifying? Every time Trump wakes up in the morning, he's demeaning the office of the presidency. Jesus Christ. Woo. Now, here we go. Here, Mr. Trump's position runs completely afoul of another presidential precedent, that of Bill Clinton. Mr. Clinton argued to the Supreme Court that the demands of sitting for a deposition in the Paula Jones case would leave him unable to discharge satisfactorily, oh, there's more to the sentence, his unique constitutional responsibilities. The Supreme Court rejected the argument unanimously, and Mr. Clinton was forced to testify, initiating an indecorous process that led to his impeachment. Yeah, well, that's because Billy Boy tried to lie his way out of it. Now, you know, he was trying to lie to protect all these women that, you know, he'd had a little fun with. Yeah, that's a Southern thing, Southern white man thing. You know, yeah, I'm going to lie. I didn't want to tell anybody that Monica and me, you know, we just did what we did. Now, the decision by the Supreme Court, unanimous decision against Clinton that said, hey, Bill, bullshit, go testify. Well, the decision was so resounding, and as Lippman writes, the precedent so definite that it's puzzling that Trump's lawyers would even attempt to make it a main plank of their argument to the special counsel that Trump doesn't have the time. It would interfere with his governing the country. Maybe in the morning, you orange asshole, when you're watching Fox and Friends, huh? Or maybe in the evening when you're watching movies on television. Or maybe when you have your executive time and you're chomping down on those cheeseburgers. Huh? Maybe you could do it one of those times. Ooh. Lippman says, it is strained. I love that word. It is strained to argue that the fact of the criminal investigation would make Mr. Trump's testimony either be more time-consuming or more demeaning than was Mr. Clinton's. Now, remember, Clinton was sitting for a civil deposition. Trump would be sitting for a criminal deposition. Now, Trump's lawyers, according to Lippman, finally offered a factual argument that he could not have intentionally impeded the FBI's investigation because he did not know that his national security advisor, Michael Flynn, was under investigation when he asked Mr. Comey if he could, "Can you see your way clear letting this go?" You really think Trump didn't know? Lippman writes, first of all, Mueller may not see the facts in the same way. We don't know yet. But what we do know is that even if Mr. Trump's point were factually accurate, it would not foreclose an obstruction of justice charge. Lippman closes by saying, all three of Mr. Trump's pillars of defense support no weight. Mr. Mueller may have practical or policy reasons for staying his hand in finding obstruction, but he needn't worry about the proffered legal impediments. They are all losers. End quote, Harry Lippman. All right, Catherine, may I have another break, please? When we come back, I wanted to mention here a little bit with the time we have left about Trump's ability, unfettered ability, unrestricted ability, to kill people. We'll be right back. The Trump Justice Department has issued a ruling, a legal opinion that was released last Thursday. Comes from the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel. That's the same office that told Bush and Cheney that it was legal here in the United States to order torture. Anyway, in Trump's case, the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel has said that Donald Trump has broad constitutional power, almost unchecked, to order acts of warfare without congressional approval. Now, that's been going on since, the last time we had a congressional declaration of war, of course, was World War II, December 9th, 1941. The legal opinion came as a result of the airstrikes that targeted Syrian installations because it was determined that allowing Trump to do that would be in the national interest and because the attack would carry little risk of escalation. What does that mean? Does that mean if there is a more than little risk of escalation, you can't do it, or it just wouldn't be wise? Like, it wouldn't be wise to send a couple of missiles into downtown Moscow for the obvious reason. There'd be great risk of escalation, right? Stephen Engel, who is Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel, that means he's a Trump stooge, wrote, quote, given the absence of ground troops, the limited mission and the time frame, and the efforts to avoid escalation, the anticipated nature, scope, and duration of these airstrikes did not rise to the level of a war for constitutional purposes. I wonder what Stephen would consider a war. I mean, if you're attacking enemy troops with air-to-ground fire using the United States Air Force, what the fuck do you call that? What do you call that? Graduation ceremonies? No, I think you'd call it war. Now, that claim was rejected immediately by Senator Tim Kaine, the Democrat of Virginia, who has regularly argued that Congress is failing to maintain its constitutional role of being that part of the government that does make decisions about war and peace. Kaine said, after this ruling was released by the Office of Legal Counsel in the Justice Department, oh, Christ, Kaine said, quote, is there any doubt that America would view a foreign nation firing a missile at targets on American soil as an act of war? The ludicrous claim that this president can magically assert national interest and redefine war to exclude missile attacks and thereby bypass Congress should alarm us all. This is further proof, Kaine went on, that Congress must finally take back its authority when it comes to war, end quote. Well, now, it's not just Trump. I mean, look what Bush did. Obama justified its operations in Syria. The justification was targeting the Islamic State. And Obama argued that it came under Congress's 2001 and 2002 authorization to use military force against al-Qaeda. But that was for the Iraq War, and that was a result of an attack on the United States that left over 3,000 people dead, including the majority of whom were American citizens. But the question is, does that authority cover April 2017, 16 years later, and April 2018, 17 years later, airstrikes targeting forces of Bashar al-Assad as punishment for chemical weapons use? Huh? We don't care, do we? But having Trump become aware that he has the power to wake up in the morning, take a piss, put up some tweets, and then call in his flunkies and say, all right, I want to bomb Iran today. Fucking do it. But Mr. Do it! Yeah. Do it. Chris Christie has had his Road to Damascus moment, referencing the Bible. Chris Christie knocked the claim from Donald Trump's legal team that the Prez cannot obstruct justice and could simply shut down the Russia investigation altogether. Judas Christie, former Republican governor, was on ABC News this week with another, Judas Stephanopoulos, and Christie said, quote, it's an outrageous claim. It's wrong, end quote. So even Chris Christie, who is a blustery old fat ass, even Chris Christie is saying that Trump is wrong. Now, if Christie would have been, made attorney general, which is what Christie wanted, I doubt seriously if Christie would be saying something like that. And by the way, I'll probably revisit this tomorrow, but according to the U.S. military, its actions, they did their own report, killed 500 civilians in Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, and Yemen last year. That was a report that was released on Friday. It was a month overdue. The report added that, quote, more than 450 reports of civilian casualties from 2017 remain to be assessed. So why are they issuing the report now? There's another 450 incidents to be taken a look at from last year. Which means, if you're keeping score, that the number of deaths will increase. The report does not list any civilian casualties in Somalia, where we have U.S. troops. The report also said there were no credible claims of civilian casualties in Libya. Well, that's good to know, right? You know, rather than get into this, I think I'll let this wait until tomorrow because, you know, when you have Murder Incorporated investigating itself, what do you think the investigation is going to turn up? That's right. It's going to turn up that Murder Incorporated acted strictly within the limits of the law. And to think it's only Monday. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.